Just means they were sealed safely away from the corrosive sea air. Could be everything we need.
Only reason we're here was because of the droids.
Those damn machines will be waiting for us.
Maybe. So we'll go in through the roof. They won't expect that.
Who the hell would?
Stopping at the 55-gallon drum, JB gathered the foam cups and stuffed them into his munitions bag. Those would help a lot if they had to firebomb the droids. Leading the way, Ryan returned to the row of storage units, the smooth floor only damp in spots by now. The puddles had flowed into the drains and gone somewhere else.
Stay here. Me first.
Jack reclaimed the dropped pry bar and walked past the open unit to the next door. The albino easily snapped the locking mechanism of the bar, then gave the door a shove and ran for the loading dock as the door slid aside. Silence ruled the warehouse. The vents remained quiet, and no swirling yellow clouds hissed into the corridor.
Seems safe.
They proceeded warily to the second unit until they glanced inside and found it as empty as the first.
Shit.
There were a few candy bar wrappers on the floor and faded inventory sheets attached to a clipboard hung from a nail on the wall. Nothing else. Resolute, Ryan took the pry bar and went to the next unit, only to find the same thing. Candy wrappers and all. It was starting to look as though the place might be empty, but there was only one way to know.
Why was there such a strong smell of horseradish? Mustard gas made from horseradish?
Don't know for sure. Could be. I know that VX is made from meat tenderizer.
They used to put nerve gas on food?
Sort of. In a powder form, it's harmless. Only deadly when it's stabilized as a gas.
Christy broke open the door and checked inside.
Empty. Your turn, Dean.
The boy went to the next unit.
Damn crazy white coats.
An hour later, the last door was ripped open, and the companion stared at yet another empty storage unit. Scraps of wood and packing material floating in tiny puddles from the earlier deluge.
Nothing again.
Dean marched into the room, brandishing the steel bar, as if physically challenging the storage unit to produce supplies. There was a calendar on the wall showing January 2000 and something, the final year, blurry from the sprinklers. The days were checked off, up to the 21st. He turned away in disgust. They already knew the date of Skydark.
Come on. Still got the next level to check.
And if that's cleaned out, too?
Then we try for Police HQ. We know the droids will be waiting for us. There should be lots of blasters and grins in the SWAT vault. Those are often airtight.
Passing by the elevator, Christy paused for a moment, straining to hear the popcorn sound again, but she couldn't hear anything unusual. Maybe the popping had something to do with the gas. Without electricity, the elevator couldn't move, so they all went straight to the door for the stairs. Looking over the portal with a lantern, JB decided it was clear of traps and pulled it open. Inside, wide concrete steps edged with steel led down into darkness. 6 hour in hand, Ryan took point, with Christy right behind holding the lantern high. That left Ryan's hands free and cast both of them in the shadow of the lantern's bottom. That would make them a difficult target for a sniper to zero in on. Ryan really didn't think there was anything alive in the pre-dark building, but the mice and beetles feasting off the ancient moldy paper. The steps took a turn at a landing, and he stepped over a couple of limp uniforms lying alongside several rusted beer cans. He snorted at the sight, and deliberately stepped on the soldiers' uniforms. 2 more landings later, the stairs ended on a terrazzo floor, a duty roster posted by the only door. There were no signs of any boobies, so he tried the handle. The door was unlocked, but swung open only a few inches before hitting something solid on the other side. Ryan tried reaching through the slim crack, but his muscular arm was too large. He threw his weight against the door, and it merely yielded another inch.
Let me try, Ryan.
Giving her space, the one-eyed warrior moved out of the way, and the mutie beauty squeezed her arm through the crack. For a brief moment, Christy thought something brushed against her bare flesh. Then she found the obstruction and traced its outline with her fingertips.
It's a forklift. Must have run wild like the cars on the bypass when the nuke went off.
Those things weigh a ton.
Turning, Ryan placed his back to the door, then put a boot under the cinder block wall across the landing. Lifting his other boot into place, the man heaved against the blockage, and the door began to scrape along the floor. Placing aside their weapons, Christy and JB joined Ryan, and the trio forced the stubborn door open another foot, the forklift shuddering from the sideways motion. Suddenly, the door swung open all the way, and the machine toppled over. Ryan dropped a boot and stopped himself from falling, then stood and spun with his blaster out. Christy and JB were already in that position, studying the room beyond in the pressurized lantern's light. The bottom level of the warehouse was filled with open wooden crates bearing military identification codes. Excelsior stuffing was strewn about in piles a yard deep, the broken tops of the crates dashed into corners. Empty plastic pallets lay on the cold terrazzo floor, tangles of steel packing straps coiled into wild formations. Foam packing pellets covered the floor like snow, and everywhere lay sheets of gray, cushioning foam bearing the cut-out silhouettes of weapons, hand cannons, long blasters, and rapid fires. They walked through the vast piles of litter.
Shit, fire. Been looted.
Bending to pick up the top of a plastic box, Ryan couldn't read the military code set in raised lettering, but he knew the distinctive shape.
Law rocket. Just what we needed.
Looks like the soldiers took everything.
Not everything!
Dean lifted an M16-M203 combo assault rifle into view. Brushing away the foam packing peanuts, he inspected the weapon, working the bolt and opening the 40mm Gren launcher's breech fitted underneath the M16 machine gun.
Fine, it just needs ammo.
Grabbing a large wooden crate that was lying on its side, Ryan flipped it over and laid the M16-M203 on wooden slats.
We start here. If they missed one blaster, there could be more buried in the rest of this crap. JB, stand guard. The rest of us, rummage through the trash.
Better stay in a group, or else we'll only end up going over the same ground.
Like hunting landmines. Only now won't find.
Going to their hands and knees, the companions started shifting the ancient litter, running stiff fingers through the mounds of pellets, and carefully pulling apart the sharp strands of steel packing strips.
Hot damn!
Mildred lifted another M16-M203 combo from the rubbish and placed it on top of the crate next to the first long blaster. Shifting a pallet, Jack pulled out a belt of 40mm shells that had slid underneath. In a pile of foam pads, Dean found a repair kit, and mixed into a heap of used tape, Christy located two empty ammo clips, and then two more. Time passed as the work slowly progressed. Many times the people grunted as slivers of wood stabbed their questing fingers, or the steel straps sliced across knuckles, but the hunt neither paused nor slowed. The piles of trash reached more than 6 feet high in some spots, and they went through every bit, watching for individual rounds. A single H.E. Gren was found and added to the small pile on the crate, then a battered claymore mine in questionable working condition. Next came a windfall as an entire box of timing pencils for C4 was discovered, but no plastique itself. Reaching the far wall, the companions took a short break, then started digging their way back, now tossing the litter into their original path. This made the work a lot easier, and their speed increased. But nothing was found on this pass, or the next. Grabbing a sturdy fiberglass crate, Ryan tried to lift it aside, but the container seemed stuck to the floor. Kicking a clear area around the crate, the man saw that the lid was still screwed in place, the sides intact and undamaged. Drawing the punga, he used the tip of the blade to remove the screws, then cut away the security tape sealing the lid in place.
What's this?
Find something, lover.
Tell you in a sec.
He carefully pulled out handfuls of stuffing until finding a huge plastic case buried in the center. In spite of its size, the case wasn't very heavy, and Ryan lifted it from the nest of packing to place it gingerly on the floor.
I know that box.
So do I.
Ryan swung it open to expose a mint-condition M1A military flamethrower. The burner and louvered hose shone with protective gel, the twin tanks satin smooth under the camo paint job. Checking the main crate again, Ryan found canisters of condensed fuel and a charging unit for the pressure tank mixed in with the flamethrower.
Excellent.
This was old tech to the man. The trader liked to use flamethrowers in battle. They were fearsome weapons that often made raiders leave, thus saving lives and ammo. Ryan and JB could repair the things in their sleep, and both men knew how to walk a burner and not get scorched by the splash.
This'll do.
Ryan closed the case to search through the rest of the crate. There was nothing more inside, so he ferried the weapon over to JB and continued the garbage hunt. A few more of those, and they'd be back in business. An hour later, the tired people reached the starting point again and broke for a fast meal of granola bars and beef jerky while JB finished his inventory of the meager finds. From the